Welcome back to another episode of Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts.
On this episode, we will be talking with Steve Yunkins from Q2Q Comics. And if you have not read the comics, you need to pause right now and go check out their website at Q2QComics.com. You will love it. So thank you for sitting down with us, Steve. And, you know, let's start asking some questions.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So tell us a little bit of how you got started, how you got into theater, and what led you to Q2Q.
Okay. Well, the theater story is a little bit of a long one. When I was in the seventh grade, I signed up to be the stage manager for a production of Midsummer Night's Dream, just on a whim, just sitting in English class, and the sign-up sheet came around, and I put my name on it. And then we went through it, and I enjoyed all of the, like, building of the sets and painting things, and would come in on Saturdays and work with my English teacher's husband to build stuff, and it was really just the two of us, and it was a lot of fun. And then, being middle schoolers, half of the cast dropped out, and everyone that was on crew wound up being on stage, because as the teacher said, everybody likes to be an actor anyway, you all want to be on stage, so I got kind of shanghaied into being Aegeus in Midsummer Night's Dream. I remember hating it, but I also remember having a good time with my friends on stage, and oh, that was fun, but also I never want to do this again in my life. And like after it was all said and done, I was like, okay, theater is not a thing that I really ever need to do. I think it's not for me. And I was kind of turned off to it all through high school. I didn't do it. I got into college, and then I had spent time in high school as a musician, and I was like working, like running sound for like fire hall shows and all the local punk shows. And I made some money doing that, and then kept doing it through college. And then suddenly there was a girl that I was interested in, and she was directing a production of Vampire Lesbians of Sodom and needed a sound designer, and described it to me as like making a 2-hour mixtape. And I was like, I can totally do that. That sounds like fun. And I did it, and I enjoyed it, and I felt like I did a good job with it, and I started working for the theater my sophomore year of college. I started working as a student technical assistant, and I was the only person doing sound there. We had one professor. I went to a tiny college in Frederick, Maryland, and we had like 1,500 students and maybe less than 30 people in the entire theater program, and most of them were actors. And we had two theater classes. There was no major. It was only a minor program. The classes were acting and improv, and that was it. And I didn't take either of them. I just worked on the shows as they came up. Yeah, I did sound. My roommate was the lighting designer. And we just kind of goofed off and did all of that and kind of learned trial and error for a couple of years with no one telling us what was right or wrong with it. And then he went on to become the technical director and now production manager of the Maryland Ensemble Theater. And I worked there with him for a number of years, and we were roommates through that too. And yeah, I started doing, I got paid to do sound design for them. And it was one of those things where I graduated college in the middle of a recession, and there wasn't really jobs to be had. My degree was in literature. What was I really going to do with that right now? So I started going where I could get paid, and that was doing sound and being an audio engineer. And mostly, yeah, mostly design work for a tiny little theater. We had fewer than 100 seats in most configurations, and, you know, we ran 3 or 4 shows a weekend, and that was kind of what we did. Through that, yeah, Doug was my roommate through college, and we lived together after college too. He was the technical director, and he was having a particularly rough tech week one week, and I started doing just these doodles of him, and I put them on post-it notes, and I put them up all over his office, and they were just him doing silly things. And those were the first drawings of Wuggles. So he's the real life basis of that. And like, if you see the two of them together, you're like, oh yes, that's him. he's talked about being, yeah, Eric, you met him.
Yeah, I met him at USITT, and it's the resemblance is uncanny.
But, yeah, so I did the little doodles for him, the little post-it note doodles. And then I started making a character of me, which became the Steve character as myself insert. And then, I just did a couple of doodles of the two of us just goofing off in the theater. And then I made a stage manager character and then thought, oh, I can make some actual comics with this. I'd been doing comics through college, all the way back, you know, I learned to read from Peanuts and, you know, was coloring in Garfield books for fun. That was what I did as a little kid. And then I started making comics in high school, and then in college I did one for the newspaper. That ran in the newspaper every, 2 or 3 weeks. And I had a website with those. It was a webcomic. I updated it twice a week and never really got any, like, footing with it, but it was fun to do. And I thought it made me cool. I was wrong, but... Yeah, so I got back, I was talking to Doug one day, and he was like, oh, there aren't any good, like, theater webcomics. Like, there was a Good Tickle Brain, who I know through the internet. I know Mia pretty well now, and we kind of commiserate on the difficulty of, like, of being these theater webcomic artists, because nobody else really does it, and so we kind of have our own little niche on it, and she does pretty much only Shakespeare stuff, and then I only really cover the tech side of it, so that's really about it out there for that. And so once we realized that there wasn't much out there, like, in this whole audience that was kind of starved for content to reflect them and be about them, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's great. I should try to make something of that. And I made 8 comics in one kind of manic fit, just sitting there drawing for a solid day, and put them up on Facebook to show people, just be like, oh, look at this funny thing. And then within a few days, one of my friends, who was the first professional stage manager I'd ever worked with, she had posted them on the Badass Stage Managers of Chicago Facebook group, which is their, like, the Chicago stage management group. And she posted some there, and they started to get some traction. People started to like them and share them around. And then I very quickly threw together a website and was like, yes, I am this professional internet comics person. I totally have been doing this. It was really quick there. And then I had done about 40 of them, or 49 of them. And I made a comic about actors breaking props, and you should hide them in their light so they'll never find them. And then suddenly there were tens and then hundreds of thousands of people reading the comic, and it just kind of stuck around there. That's how that started.
When did you realize Q2Q was becoming popular?
So I started making the comics in March, and then by June of that year, people that I didn't know personally or didn't, like, have a Facebook friend in common with were sending me emails about it and being like, oh, thank you so much for doing this comic. That's when I started to think, oh, man, people are reading this or liking it. But it wasn't really until all the hate mail started rolling in that I realized that people were actually paying attention to it.
Oh, no.
I started making these just, you know, little doodles for me and my friend in our tiny theater, and people started to say, oh, what you're doing is not representative of the entire industry. And they were right, because they weren't. They were inside jokes for me and my friends. And it just happened that the stuff that we were relating to was also the stuff that everyone else was like, oh, yeah, that's completely my life, too. I know it was going to happen. But so it was quick. It was like 3 months from when I started making them to when people really started reading them.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have any of your favorite comics?
My personal favorite is still, it's number 121. It's called Incremental. And it's one where the director has a note that he passes on through the stage manager to the sound guy. And they're like, he said he wants you to turn it up a scotch. And then he pulls out a sheet that has a bunch of different markations that are, like, specifically delineated out. And he's like, is that exactly what he said? That one's my favorite. I have the little cheat sheets. I don't think I have any here in arm's reach. But, the little cards with all the, like, half scotch and pre-reformation smidge is one of my favorites. I like that one. I like any of the ones where Steve doesn't know anything about lighting and brings Wuggles the wrong thing when he asks for it. Those are fun.
Do you know which of your comics tend to get shared the most? Like, which ones have been the most popular in the theater community?
The anatomy drawings, the first comic, goes around a lot, and every once in a while I see it. It's the only one that anyone has, like, tried to steal. Like, anytime that someone's like, oh, this, you know, someone slapped their logo on your comic, it's always the anatomy of a stage manager. Yeah, that one goes around a lot. There are a couple other ones. The Dear Women in Tech Theater one, that my girlfriend wrote a Tumblr post that was about standing up for your fellow women in theater, and I thought it was incredibly important, and it was broken down in such a way that I thought the best way that I could do better than just sharing the post was if we made a comic from it, and then, you know, use my platform to try to strengthen her voice with it. And that one has gone around a lot, which is good. That's important too. And some of the more heartfelt ones also get shared more. The ones, the emotional roller coaster, it's number 220. is really popular too. That one's just going through the like emotional arc of a show opening and closing from the stage manager's perspective. And there's a couple number the actors happen to it. That one goes around a lot. But otherwise, it's just like different departments have their favorite one that they'll share around or they'll post. And so everyone like I walked into the Ohio University shop. And posted on the electrics department door were 15 of the electrics comics. And at first I was like, oh, great. Now I have to interact with these people that already know me, but I don't know any of them. And now we're never going to be friends. but instead of just panicking about it, I gave them a print of the C-Wrench, This Is Not a Hammer comic and a copy of the book. And I was like, yeah, so this is cool. It's so neat. And thank you guys so much for having all that.
Now, earlier you said it kind of started out as some inside jokes with your friend. But after a while, where were your ideas coming from?
Probably half of them are stories or real things that happen. And like, as I've gone and worked at different theaters, I see different things that come out. I sit down in production meetings and I'm half listening to what's actually going on for the departments. And the other half is like, oh, can I make a comic out of this problem? and I just try to think of things that, or look at things that are occurring consistently or things that are happening to, like that seem to happen every show to people and try to find like what is the core of that event and try to make something like generally relatable out of a specific situation. But you'll also find like a number of the comics are, very specific things that have happened to me in my life. And if you were there working on that show and you see that comic, you know exactly what it is. And so I try not to make comics about the shows that I'm currently working on.
That's smart.
Yeah, if you wait about 6 months, then looking at them, yeah, you'll see like, oh yes, this was absolutely, you know, South Pacific or whatever. It's kind of helped. So the comics are running in Stage Directions magazine right now. And there's a delay between when they get one like unique comic for them every month. And then I get to post it later after the magazines come out. And so I get this like month delay so I can make something that I'm currently thinking about and then it doesn't get published for a month. So that helps.
Oh, well.
They also dig through the archives and they pull stuff out and post on their Facebook page that like comics I've forgotten that I even made. And it's good kind of to see like what someone else digging through it sees as like, these are the choices. These are the good ones, the choice pieces. Cause for me, it's, you know, when I'm doing it 3 times a week, it's just, they start to run together a little bit and I get a sense of who the characters are, but I sometimes forget that I've done, you know, one specific comic or said something specifically. And sometimes I'll make them and I'll send them in, or I'll send a sketch to my girlfriend and say, hey, have I done this before?
Yeah, you've done quite a bit. You're over 400?
The last one that I did is number 475.
Oh, wow.
But it hasn't been published yet. I haven't finished coloring it yet. It's on that computer right now.
And you've slowed down a bit for the summer because you're actually working summer stock?
Yeah. So for the past 4 years, I've worked at Stages St. Louis for some portion of the summer. And summer stock is a little bit of a misnomer is it's a full 6 month season. But so I'm here from April until October in St. Louis. And I spend the rest of the year in, Ohio with, my girlfriend while she's attending Ohio University. And so I'm kind of supporting her there and making comics and doing that full time for the other half of the year.
So are you at the Muni?
No, I'm at Stages St. Louis. I'm not at the Muni.
It's a little more intimate than the Muni. But then again, everything is more intimate than the Muni.
Yeah, we are very, very proud of our 400-seat house, and we do the best that we can with what we have. We put on some good stuff. It just, yeah, it's not quite the, not that size, not that scale. But
sometimes that can be more fun, though.
Yeah, they use the word intimate a lot to describe the experience, and they're not wrong.
Cool. And your girlfriend is actually a props person.
Yes, she is. She is a props grad at OU.
Oh, cool.
And she is currently the prop. She's going to get mad at me if I get her job title wrong. but she is, I believe, the props artisan for Merry-Go-Round Playhouse right now. She is not the assistant prop master because there is no assistant prop master there. But she's kind of the assistant prop master. But
we won't tell her.
Yeah. So she's out there right now. And then she comes back and she finishes her master's program in December. She'll graduate, so she'll be out there in the world. But she was also involved in Prop Lab this year at USITT.
Yes.
She's assisting her.
I got to meet all of you there at USITT. It was great.
Yes. Yep. It was a good time. And I accosted Eric and just randomly on the second floor around the whatever that display was. It's like, oh my god, you're that guy.
It was a Mexican theater.
Right, right.
Well, at least you've met him. Fun fact for our listeners, Eric and I have never met face to face. We're going to see how far we can go into this show without meeting.
It's a little tough with the schedules and the geography.
And both on either coast.
Okay, so now I need to meet you, Ashley. I need to meet you before you meet Eric.
We'll make it happen. One day I'll be at USITT.
There we go.
So in the comic, obviously you have a props master. So can you tell us your inspiration for Sam and where did she come from?
Is she?
It is. Okay, that's what I thought. I said that and was like, hold up, let's double check that fact.
Yes, okay, it is. Samantha Stratakis. When I started doing the design, I knew that I wanted to make her kind of a character foil for Cass, the TD and Carpenter, because I knew that the two of them would probably be working closely, so I wanted them to kind of have a balance, and they've developed a really good friendship in the comics, the two of them. My headcanon is that the two of them have had some romantic relationship as well. But yes. Liz keeps reminding me, my girlfriend keeps reminding me that anything that I say is headcanon is actually canon, and it doesn't have to be. I don't get to be a fan of my own thing. I just get to create it. So
write fan fiction about your own comics.
That's a tangent, but one of the tricks of it is that I try not to do too much of the personal lives of the characters in it, because it is so much about the work and not really about it's about the job titles more than it is about the people, and so stuff creeps in, but that's a tangent. I had designed this redheaded props girl that was like my it was one of the first characters that I created after the So I had Steve and Wuggles, the sound and lights, and then I had Morty, the stage manager, and then I added the technical director and the costumer and the director in the next round. And the very next character that I made almost immediately afterwards was the prop master. And it was not, and people were asking me the first time I went to USITT when I was going to have, prop master and a scenic designer and, dresser and wardrobe and a rigger was the other one. People keep asking for a rigger. And it was like, I couldn't keep up with as many characters as I had. And so I was slowly introducing them to try to keep them straight in my head. But I knew that I wouldn't do a prop master. I wanted to do it. I had the idea for the character around number 50, maybe. But I waited a pretty long time to introduce him until I was solid with who the other characters were first. And this was before I had met Liz, my girlfriend, and she also happens to be a redheaded props person.
Destiny.
This was immediate. I met her immediately before I introduced the characters, and they're like, "Well, why did you make character after her?" I was like, "I didn't. The character existed before that." So a lot of her personality inspiration does come from Liz and things that Liz has done, which of course, I can't even lie about that anymore, that the character has become more and more Liz. Her namesake, though, her first name, Samantha, comes from, a friend of mine and Liz's from the internet, who is one of the more vocal people in the props community on Tumblr, which Liz and I worked to develop the tech blur, the tech theater community on Tumblr, and we kind of helped cultivate that. And Samantha is Prop It Like It Hot on Tumblr. She's been one of the people that I have talked to and bounced ideas off of, and I wanted to give back to her and thank her, so I named the first name after her. And Stratakis is from Helen Stratakis, who's the prop master at the Barter Theater. She was Liz's boss for a long time, and she's one of the coolest people I've ever met in my life. And so, again, just wanted to give a little hat tip there, a little nod.
Yeah, super cool person. We totally have to get her on the show, too. My wife and I actually met her at one of the Prop Master conferences, and my wife went up, and she's like, Strategus? Is that? Are you the inspiration for Q to Q?
Yeah, so I know you got to talk to Helen. She's great.
We'll get her on the show. Yeah,
do it. Helen backed the first volume Kickstarter, and she was one of the last people to send me her address. And so I had to send her a message reminding her to send me things. And so I had to ask her what the Helen was taking so long.
Yeah. Cool. And so you just completed another Kickstarter. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, we just kickstarted volume 2, which ended in March. We raised $42,000 or so. Wow. For it. Of a whatever it was $20,000 was the goal, so we were more than 200% funded on it. Yeah, it's going to be the comics number 221 through 440. So there's 220 comics in the first volume, and so we're going to do another 220 in this volume. And it's got commentary and, extra drawings. It's including all the holiday comics that didn't make it into the first book. What else is in there? There's a how to draw Wuggles section, and some bonus artwork that's sitting there. I did, little doodles. There's a comic where the intern has a list of notes he had taken of things that'll kill you in the carpentry shop, and he's got little doodles drawn all around the side of it, and so we took little doodles like that, and I did them that are just kind of scattered throughout the book too. Yeah, there's also some Exposureland fun bucks that you can cut out of the back of the book.
Oh yeah. So, for when you get paid in exposure.
Or when you need to pay someone in exposure. Yeah, we are almost finished with the layout for it. We should finish soon. The book will go to print in August, and we will have them hopefully by the middle of October, and then we'll be able to start shipping them out in November.
Awesome.
So we'll have all the Kickstarter rewards should be fulfilled by February of next year, maybe. Yeah, and we'll have books for sale in the Q2Q comic shop online in November for pre-sale probably, and then once we get through the Kickstarter stuff, we'll start sending out all the rest of those. More than close to 1,000 of them going out. We're also reprinting Volume 1 now. We're sold out of that right now, but with the Kickstarter, we actually raised enough to reprint Volume 1 with it. So we'll have some of those going out. Yep. And hopefully, I hope to have them at USITT this year, but that's more up to them than it is up to me. But, but yeah, they've carried the books in the past, so hopefully they'll do that again.
That's awesome. So other than your Kickstarter, what are your other plans for the comic, and what can we expect to see in the upcoming months?
Well, right now I'm focused on being the audio supervisor here, and so I'm able to draw maybe one comic a month. So not too many comics going on right now, unfortunately. But once I get back in October, around doing the Kickstarter, I'll hopefully be on a schedule of 3 a week again. Mm-hmm. I don't currently have any like characters in the pipeline or any like super juicy secrets to tell you. but hopefully, yeah, I want to get back on a regular update schedule. I miss it while I'm here, not able to do it. But at the same time, when I'm doing the comics, I miss, you know, being in the, at the board and in the booth and doing theater. But it's kind of tricky to do both at the same time. Yeah, I mean, I know that there's going to be at least a volume 3 eventually, because I've got more comics than are currently going to be in volume 2. So I'll keep working towards that. So sometime around comic is 660 or so, look out for a Kickstarter for volume 3. Yeah, it'll be mostly that. I'm always trying to come up with new t-shirts and stuff. I haven't done a new t-shirt design in a little while, and I feel like I'm personally getting bored of the ones that are currently out there, so I need to come up with some new ones. Yeah, the original goal for the comic was I want to do this for 5 years or 500 comics, and I'm going to blow right past that. Yeah, I want to keep going. I guess it needs to be, you know, 10 years or 1,000 comics and keep pushing on it. One of my favorite webcomics, Girls with Slingshots, just ended after more than a decade. And 2,700 comics or so. And she just did her omnibus. And I'm looking at that thinking, oh, God, my future is going to be somewhere in that, buried under books. And
Cool. So you mentioned the stage directions does some of your comics. Have you ever been approached by any of the other big tech theater companies to work with them? Roscoe, Rose Brand?
Nothing's ever like gone all the way through, really. I've talked to Roscoe a little bit. Creative Connors, I talk to them every time I meet them. They're great guys. And the comic runs kind of alongside an ad for theirs and stage directions, which is kind of neat. but we've tried to line stuff up and haven't been able to do any work for them, really. Mm-hmm. But they've always been very nice. ETC approached me, and for Fred Foster's birthday, they had me do an anatomy of him. There was a committee that had approval over it, and they made more than 1,000 copies of it, gave it to a lot of their employees up there in Wisconsin. It was him and his, his Birkenstocks and mm-hmm. as he does. And that was a fun one to work on. And I got to meet him at USITT, not last year, but the year before. I got to talk to him, and he's got a way when you meet him of just making you feel like you're the most important person in the world. And mm-hmm. he's such a genuine guy. So that was really fun to be able to do that for him. And this was, I had to check the date. I don't actually remember when that was. It was at least a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
So what is the strangest place you have ever seen your comic at?
I get a lot of people, friends of mine will go off to a summer stock they haven't worked before, and they'll find them, taped up in places or in the booth. I meet new people that say, oh yeah, well, the booth at this place has your comic taped up on it. And I always ask, which one is it? I need to know what it is. Probably my favorite place, maybe not the strangest, but my favorite place, there was a playbill.com, feature on the set dressing for the play that goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And they had the anatomy comic taped up in the fake booth, that they had, in the show. So that's a pretty cool one. Which I would just like to say that they could have asked. I could have gotten them a nicer copy of it if they'd have asked me. But
So your comic is actually a period correct set dressing for a show.
Absolutely. This is a props podcast, and it. I can't think any other places that are good. I mean, there are people that have bought original comic art. I can show you guys just so you at least know what I'm talking about. But the full-size drawings are yay big. Mm-hmm. But yeah, people can buy the original comic art. And there's a couple in Canada that has probably 20 of them in between the two of them. They just, whenever they like one, they buy the original for it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and they've sent me pictures of their little shrine kind of thing. And it's really neat to see, your original artwork treated and respected like that. And put up, these are just, doodles I make to make people laugh, and, somebody's hanging it in the wall of their house. There's a couple other people that have substantial collections of the originals, too, but I just keep them in a box. I can show you the box I keep them in.
Well, guys, we are all out of time for today, but don't worry, we're going to finish up this interview next week. Thank you all for listening. If you have any questions or topics you would like us to cover, send us an email at propspodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at SilkMache. Also, guys, let's spread the word about our show, because hopefully we can reach as many people as possible in the theater world. Let's start educating, and even people not in the theater world. Let's see what can happen. So these have been your hosts,
Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. And thank you to our guest, Steve.
Hooray.
We'll see you next time.